Good morning, everyone. Good morning. I mentioned over Yontif that there's sometimes a challenge that post the Yontif season, people wish a gesunden winter, a good winter, and that's it. That there's a shutdown, and it's important not to fall into that trap. And over the Yom Tovim, we have obligations that we're appropriately focused on, whether it's the issues of the Arba Minim or the proper construction of Sukkah, dealing with appropriate aspects of Tshuva, and so on and so forth. But this year, we have an issue that we really do need to focus on, and it's Shemitah. That's everybody knows that if you take the year and you divide it by seven, and it divides perfectly without a remainder, then you know that it's a Shemitah year. So this is the 725th Shemitah cycle, if I just did the math correctly, from Bryas Olam. And we have an obligation to have an understanding of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael and the aspects as they relate to Shemitah. And we're particularly privileged that this morning we have the schus and the great merit of having Rabbi Dr. Michael Rosenzweig here with us. The Yontif season could have been fairly characterized as a spiritual decathlon. Three-day Yontifs plus Yom HaKippurim is 10 days. And after such a long Yontif season, to get on a train early in the morning to come to our community to teach Torah is something that in and of itself, without the even teaching, is something that's uplifting and a spiritual message of importance. But we are blessed, Rabbi Dr. Rosenzweig, and I could say this because there's a family connection that precedes his professional career, but even though Rabbi Rosenzweig has seniority, not only in terms of what he does professionally, but even in terms of age, but Rabbi Dr. Rosenzweig at a very young age displayed prodigal talents that flourished, and he has become really a leading Torah voice in the world. One of the has been a Rosh Hashiva at YU for approximately 30 years, and has many literal Talmidim and virtual Talmidim. And in addition to the teaching, the writing that he does has reached really thousands. And it's an incredible schus, an incredible merit to have him here with us this morning. We've had him here in the past, and every time it's an honor and a joy. And to speak about, I think, an issue that's important to us, or should be important to all of us, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, it's really a great privilege and honor to call upon Rabbi Dr. Rosenzweig.
Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Schmidman. It's really always a pleasure to be here. Recall that a couple of years ago we were here on Shavuos and enjoyed very much the hospitality of the community. And looking in the crowd to see some Talmidim and friends. And really, it's always a pleasure to be here. And in addition, it's an added dimension, always, as Rabbi Schmidman noted. Really, our families know each other for many, many years before either of our generations, and that's just an added nofech, special schus to be here. The topic I wanted to address this morning is the question of the heter of selling land in Eretz Yisrael for purposes of coping with the challenges. Excellent, thank you. Of Shemitah. Obviously, the the presentation is limited in time, and there's no effort here to render any piskei halacha, but I think it's important for people to understand, as the discussions continue about what the best way to cope with Shemitah in our era, to understand the makoros, to understand some of the issues. What I'd like to do this morning is really survey some of the topics, some of the themes, and also to provide perspective on some of them, particularly on the question of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, with respect to the Shemitah year. Let's just begin with a little bit of historical background. in the 19th century, when people started to return to what was then the Yishuv, the fledgling settlement of Eretz Yisrael, something which in retrospect, today, when we have a flourishing Medinas Yisrael and are almost reaching a point there, or maybe we have reached the point, I think we're almost reaching the point where the majority of Jews in the world live in Eretz Yisrael, which has important consequences potentially for issues like Yovel, possibly Shemitah. But when we look back in retrospect and we see that, you know, it began with the trickle and began to pick up, especially in the 19th century, there's a certain appreciation of Hashgacha, you know, in just a little bit more than one and a quarter century in terms of what has been built up in terms of Jewish life returning to Eretz Yisrael. But that, of course, provided tremendous spiritual opportunities, which we continue to reap the benefit of to this very day, but also extreme challenges. How do you live in the modern world, according to the halacha, when, again, this is a century and a quarter ago, this is certainly even more true for today, when the challenges of a modern economy, different realities exist and pose all sorts of questions, how to apply the halacha in a very ideal way. And this triggered a very intense controversy at that time, at the end of the 19th century. At stake, it was felt to be the economic well-being of the struggling Yishuv, threatened by the prohibitive restrictions imposed by Shvius. We won't go into detail, but as you're aware, during the Shemitah year, certainly if we're talking about Shemitah Daraisa, the Psukim established this in Parshas Bahar. You're not allowed to seed the land. You're not allowed to plant on the land. You're not allowed to do harisha. You're not allowed to plow the land. You're not allowed to reap the land, at least not cut, in other words, the normal produce. Certainly not the way it's done in regular years, the Isra of Ketzira and Betzira. Those are the prohibitions that apply to the Karka of Eretz Yisrael. There are even more prohibitions or more challenges when it comes to the fruits or the produce of Eretz Yisrael. There's an Isra Schora. You're not allowed to merchandise. You're not allowed to treat the produce as you do typically if you own something and you market it and you sell it. Especially agriculture is a huge part of business. It was then, it is now, in different ways, but common to both of them is the fact that it's a critical part of any economy. There's an Isra Schora, it's la'achla v'lo l'schora. You're not allowed to gain commercial benefit from it. Exporting to Chutz La'aretz is an issue, being involved with non-Jews. There's a challenge just in how to deal with peros shvius even when you eat them. There's a certain sanctity to the peros. They have to be treated properly. They can't be merely thrown away. It's a whole industry that arose as a result of that. Shvius is tofes es dameha. Even if you want to sell peros shvius, the question of the status of the money itself. So there are numerous consequences to the concept of v'hoisa Shabbos ha'aretz lachem. And the question was, how would these be handled as farmers, mostly, but also the rest of those living in Eretz Yisrael, tried to balance, on the one hand, economic need with, at the same time, obviously an appreciation of the opportunity of being in Eretz Yisrael in a place where Kedushas Haaretz, the sanctity of the land, matters. That's the reason that Eretz Yisrael is important. It's important because it's the headquarters of the Jewish people, and it provides added opportunities for Avodas Hashem, symbolically captured often by the mitzvah Satlius Ba'aretz. How do you balance those two together? And this is a controversy that rose then, which pitted the greatest Gedolim of its time against each other. It was a very passionate debate that ensued. Again, if we had time, we'd read some of the passages themselves, which are just very stirring on both sides of the debate. But, the names themselves will reflect the magnitude of personalities that were involved. The people like Rabbi Yosef Engel and Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan and the Avnei Nezer, who allowed for a circumvention, which we're going to be speaking about, which is the selling of Eretz Yisrael, at least in limited fashion, to non-Jews, so that the produce that was produced from those fields would not be subject to all of the restrictions, at least of Shemitah. We'll discuss the details in a few minutes. Of course, Rav Kook, in Eretz Yisrael himself, was in the forefront of this heter as well, and wrote a sefer, well-known sefer called Shabbos Haaretz, outlining the basis for what he considered to be the heter of Mechiratz Eretz Yisrael l'Shemitah. On the other hand, you had, equally men of great stature, the Beis Halevi, the Netziv, and many others, who were adamantly against this mechanism. The halachic issues in time often have become blurred because there's so much emotional investment, you know, in the process and in the result, including the paradox that I mentioned before, that on the one hand, a return to Eretz Yisrael, which is all about Jews realizing their destiny in their homeland, and part of that destiny is this opportunity to observe mitzvos atluyos ba'aretz, at the same time, heightened the urgency of finding some sort of solution, because you want the economic viability of the communities in Eretz Yisrael, our condition for that those communities to flourish and to thrive and to attract further influx of people. So this emotions were very much bound up in this discussion. And of course, all of this was heightened just a little bit further by the very stirring psukim that we read in Parshas Bahar, where the Torah tells us that the stakes of observing Shemitah properly are considerable. Parsha in the beginning, Vaydabar Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemar, right? Daberal b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem kisavo la'aretz asher ani nosein lachem v'shav sa'aretz Shabbos la'Hashem, and then a whole description of the requirements of Shemitah. And then the Torah goes on to tell us that both in Bahar and then again in Bechukosai, that as Chazal understood it, that the reason that Klal Yisrael were thrown out of Eretz Yisrael is because they didn't have enough faith in the Rabbonu Shel Olam. The Psukim themselves speak explicitly, what will you do, what will you eat during the Shemitah year? The special Havtacha that the Rabbonu Shel Olam gave us, that people who observe Shemitah will be taken care of, that somehow the produce of the sixth year will be enough. And this, of course, it's added significantly to the emotional aspects of the debate. People like the Netziv, who wrote a whole kuntris on this topic, was very passionate about this, basically argued that the danger of ignoring, the Havtacha that is explicit in the Torah is greater than the danger of jeopardizing the economic viability. And it isn't just a matter of profits, obviously. We're talking about a struggle for existence, certainly in that period of time. He felt that the dangers, even on a pragmatic level, were greater in one direction than in the other. And to read really some of the stirring discussions in both directions is to read really people who shared a passion for the idealism of being in Eretz Yisrael on the one hand, but who are struggling, as I say, in very fascinating manner with how you integrate that ideal with real life and with the responsibilities of leadership, rabbinic leadership in particular, of a particular era and generation. What emerged was a heter mechira, which was relied upon by many. And on the other hand, even those who advocated that heter basically qualified it in a fashion that was consistent with the emotional turmoil that I just briefly described. So that, for example, when it came to some of the chumros of Malachos Daraisa, seeding, planting, plowing, harvesting, the Rabbanim who gave the heter to sell Eretz Yisrael in order to circumvent Dinei Shemitah argued that when it came to the Surei Doraisa, those should not be done by Jewish farmers. Only some of the the Rabbanans or some of the issues of Kedushas, Peros Shvius really should be relied upon when it comes to this particular Kula. Moreover, symbolically, they revisited this heter of selling the land of Eretz Yisrael every 7 years. In other words, they didn't put into place a psak which said that, you know, from now until further notice even, right, we're going to endorse the selling of Eretz Yisrael in order to circumvent Dinei Shvius. Basically, they gave a psak for each and every Shvius. And every Erev Shvius, they would revisit the issue, and they would paskin again. Because they were, you know, basically torn, emotionally torn, spiritually torn, between on the one hand making this accommodation which they felt was practically and therefore spiritually necessary as well, but at the same time acknowledging, even publicizing that this was a bidyeved, this was something which was less obviously than ideal. For that reason also, they would always have certain tracts set aside in Eretz Yisrael, Shelo Tishtakach Torah Shvius, where Shvius was observed in its more ideal manner. In other words, where they didn't sell the land and the produce was actually hefker, it was free for anyone to take, and practice of Shvius could take place. So I'd like to do, in the time that we have, is discuss two aspects of this discussion, and just to highlight some of the basic perspectives. The first issue is the issue of whether it's permissible to sell land of Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew or not. This gets into the problem of what's known as lo sechanim, and if we have, I think I have the same sheets that you do. At least I hope so. How many pages were there in the sheets? Were there six? Or five, rather? Okay, you'll tell me if I'm on a different page. I have my own copy.
Back-to-back.
What is it? Oh, they're back-to-back. Okay. Four?
Four.
Oh, okay. So we'll do the best we can. Is there an extra copy? Okay, good. Am I taking your
copy?
No. Okay, very good. So we'll try to go through some of the makoros, just that people should be aware of what the issues are, and then that makes for a more intelligent population, and then we can also appreciate some of the nuances. The first issue is it permissible to sell land in Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews or not? And the source upon which all of this is based in the Torah is the Psukim in Devarim, Perek Zayin, that's the first little section here. Torah says, Ki v'yacha Hashem elokecha la'aretz asher atav Hashem lirishta. When you enter into Eretz Yisrael, the place, you know, of your legacy, or your heritage, v'nashal goyim rabim mipanecha, there'll be, military activity, and you will conquer the, you know, native populations there. And then the Torah lists them, Hachiti, Agirgashi, Hamori, Aknani, Aprizi, Achivi, Ayibusi, Shiva goyim rabim v'atzumim mimecha. The seven, these are called the Shiva Ha'amamim, these seven nations whose presence in Eretz Yisrael was particularly problematic. Their influence was particularly spiritually pernicious. So the idea that you could coexist with the Shiva Ha'amamim, basically the Torah emphatically rejects. And then the Torah goes on to tell us, Unasanam Hashem Elokecha lefanecha, that these nations will be defeated. V'hi kisem, hacharem tachrim osam, lo tichros lahem bris. You're not supposed to enter into a covenant with these people because it's mutually exclusive to spiritual life that is minimally acceptable to the Jewish people. V'lo sechanem. So lo tichros lahem bris means do not enter into a covenant. What does lo sechanem mean? It's a strange word. We can see some shoresh in it, but you can understand that it's a peculiar usage. It's not typical in the Torah, and it's challenging. Then the next pasuk, which is also fascinating, says, "Velo tischatein bam, do not marry or intermarry with them. Bitcha lo titein libno, ubito lo tikach livanecha." You're also not allowed to marry not your sons, not your daughters, to these people. That's the prohibition against intermarriage, which we're all very familiar with. The Mishnah in Masechet Avodah Zarah, the next piece, tells us that ein mochrim lahen b'mechuba l'karka. You're not allowed to sell real estate, basically, to Ovdei Avodah Zarah. You're allowed to sell the produce of the land. You're allowed to sell, fruits and vegetables and so on once they're cut. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mocharu Amnas Lakutz. You are also allowed to sell the land itself if you're selling it with respect to the things that grow there. The Gemara says Minani Mili. Where does this come from? This idea that you're not allowed to sell land in Eretz Yisrael to Ovdei Avodah Zarah. We'll see what we mean by that in a moment. Amar Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, Amar Kra, Lo Sechaneim. It refers to this pasuk that we, this very kind of challenging phrase, Lo Techaneim. What does it mean? Lo Titein Lahem Chanaya Bekarka. You're not allowed to provide them with a basis or a foundation, an encampment in the land. Eretz Yisrael is meant to be for the Jewish people. You shouldn't give Ovdei Avodah Zarah, right, a Beit Achiza in the land. So the Gemara says, "Hai lo techaneim mibayle, t'hachi kam rachmana lo titalem chein." We have a Masorah that lo techaneim doesn't mean chanaya, it means chein, meaning you shouldn't be overly complimentary, as we'll, you know, we'll hopefully have a chance to discuss it, but you should be careful, in other words, how you reflect attitudes towards Ovdei Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says, "Im kein lema kra lo sechuneim, my lo sechaneim, shma minotar." Okay, so we have two limudim. Then the Gemara says, "Akati mi boile, d'hochi amrachmano lo titin lahim matana shalchinam." You're not supposed to give gratuities, free gifts, to Ovdei Avodah Zarah, because that reflects a certain respect, and your loyalty to the Rabbono Shel Olam precludes that kind of respect. Im kein, the Gemara says, "Le makra lo sechineim, my lo sechaneim." So it could have been lo sechuneim, lo sechineim, lo sechaneim. Shma mina kula. Tanya nami hachi, lo sechaneim, lo titan lem chanaya bekarka. Dover acher lo sechaneim, lo titan lahem chen. Dover acher lo sechaneim, lo titan lahem matnas chinam. Now these are three very interesting areas. Each one is a potential topic for a shir, but not for today. But basically we learn three things from this ambiguous and intriguing word, sechaneim. Don't give them an encampment in the land. Lo titan lem chein. You have to be careful the way that you compliment or at least express opinions about Ovdei Avodah Zarah, because that's a touchy kind of a subject. And lo titan lahem matnas chinam. Now, from the context in Devarim, as you could see, the Torah wasn't speaking obviously about any non-Jew. It was speaking particularly, at least the context is, about Shiva Amamim, the seven nations about which we say, Lo Sechaya, that you can't coexist, you can't live with them. So this is a question that is addressed by the Balei Tosis, the next piece, Tosis Avodah Zarah, Chof Amud Aleph, Noma Kra Lo Sechaneim, Lo Titoneim Chanoye Bekarka, Dorish Nami Mehai Kra Besama, Shalalitin Lahem Chain, Shalalitin Lahem Matnas Chinam, Ustama De Milsa Mayri Bekula Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Tosis addresses this issue. Tosis says this seeming, if you read the Mishnah, and the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, it would appear that we're dealing in an unqualified manner, at least with Ovdei Avodah Zarah. V'chein mashma b'sugi b'samach v'kasha. V'halo sechaneim b'sheva umos dafka ksiv. After all, the psukim aren't speaking about any simple Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They're speaking about the seven nations which have additional strictures. D'ksiv v'noshal gayim rabimi panacha hachiti v'gomer uksiv lo tichar slaim bris lo sechaneim v'lo tischatein bam. Lest you ask, but losis chateinbam, not to intermarry with Sheva Amamim, isn't limited to Sheva Amamim. It's something that applies to all non-Jews. Well, there is a view, says Tosis in the Gemara Yavamos, that this refers to not the prohibition of intermarriage, but the prohibition to marry people from Sheva Amamim even after Geirus. I mean, that Geirus doesn't apply fully in the case of Sheva Amamim. In which case, if the psukim in this context are all referring to Sheva Amamim, it would stand to reason that the prohibition against selling land in Eretz Yisrael, as well as the Chain and the Matnas Chinam, are limited to Sheva Amamim as well. And Tosis goes on to develop this idea. I'm going to skip three lines. Tosis finally answers this question. B'yesh lomar, devadai b'kol ha'nechroi ikatam rabba delo matzinenu k'mina nele b'zayin amos. V'lo t'chaya kol neshama, leke l'ukme b'shar umos, t'behed yeksiv b'hu, v'hoya l'cha l'mas v'avaducha. We know that the way that we treat other nations is different than the way that we treat Shavamim. Right? You're allowed to enter into a covenant with them. Some we even ask, we beseech them, right, to try to make a peace between us. Certainly there's no prohibition like Losachaya called Neshama. We don't see the presence of other non-Jews as mutually exclusive with our own presence in Eretz Israel. That's something unique about Sheva Amamim. So therefore, Tosa says, when it comes to issues which seem to be about coexistence in a more fundamental way, it's clear that that's going to be limited, like the Psukim's context, to Sheva Amamim. We know we can have ongoing economic relationships with other nations within Eretz Yisrael. Perhaps there's an additional prohibition against intermarriage with the seven nations and possibly even after Gerus, because their ideology, their culture is much more incompatible with ours. So the conclusion of Bali Tosis is that when it comes to the matter of not providing opportunity of purchasing land in Eretz Yisrael, that is not limited to the Sheva Amamim. That is something that applies to Ovdei Avodah Zarah more generally. It's possible that not everybody agrees. Rav Sajagon, for example, when he counts the various mitzvos, interestingly enough, counts Lo Sichros Lahem Bris, makes it clear, those the words that precede Lo Sechaneim, that applies only to the Sheva Amamim, and doesn't quote Lo Sechaneim independently. And the author of the Perush, Sefer Mitzvot Rav Sajagon, Rabbi Ruchem Fishel Perlo, suggests that Rav Sajagon, unlike Balei Tosis, felt that the prohibitions of Chanaya Bekarka, Chain, and Matnas Chinam are limited indeed to Shiva Amanim. The fact is that most Rishonim, as they say, disagree. The Rambam, in Perek Yud of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, when he speaks about Lo Sichros Bahem Bris, also clearly applies these psukim, not only to Shiva Amamim, but to all Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And this is the mainstream view of most Rishonim. The Ravid happens to think that Lo Sichros Lahem Bris is limited to Sheva Amamim, but doesn't take a stand on the question of Lo Sechaneim. But certainly the large majority of Rishonim think that notwithstanding the context of those psukim in Devarim, Lo Sechaneim applies at least to Ovdei Avodah Zarah. The question is, what do we mean by Ovdei Avodah Zarah? That's a topic, of course, also in its own right, but one which is very relevant here. So the Meiri, who has a very well-known position throughout Shas, the Meiri was very adamant that we should distinguish in certain contexts between literally idol worshippers and what he called Amim HaGedurim Bedarke Hadas, monotheists, basically. And he included Christians together with Muslims under the rubric of Amim HaGedurim Bedarke Hadas, religious people who believe in one God and whose value system is influenced by that belief. But according to the Meiri, what emerges is that Lo Sechaneim, Lo Titalem Chanoya Bekarka, Chein Matnas Chinam, all of these are limited to real Ovdei Avodah Zarah, idol worshippers, pagans, polytheists. But monotheists, including Christians, would be excluded from this particular Issa. That is the view of the Meiri. The Kaftav Aferach, one of the Rishonim, not so well known, but who wrote on matters of Eretz Yisrael, Rav Ashtori Aparchi, basically quotes the suggestion, at least, that maybe one should distinguish between Muslims and Christians. Again, this is part of a much bigger topic. Christians, of course, as we know,
believe in the Trinity,
and that in itself is a very complicated matter, even if you take the difference between Catholics, let's say, and Protestants, what the Trinity exactly is or means. But let's say in general terms, the Trinity challenges the notion of Yichud Hashem, the idea of the unity of God, and certainly is perceived by many as Avodah Zarah. Certainly Avodah Zarah for Jews. The question is whether or not it's fully considered to be Avodah Zarah for non-Jews. That's where you have significant debate. Muslims, on the other hand, the religion of Islam believes in the Prophet Muhammad, but of course it doesn't believe theologically in any kind of shittuf, in any kind of equivalent to the Trinity. Their notion of the unity of God is actually very close to our notion of the unity of God. So when it comes to certain issues that are defined in terms of Ovdei Avodah Zarah, we find that some of the Rishonim distinguish, the Rambam does this in some places, between Muslims and Christians. And this is a suggestion that was made by the Kaftar of Ferach, and it's also quoted in the Bach, in Simen Reish Mem Tes, on the tour in Choshen Mishpat. The Beis Yosef rejected this. We have this, I think, in front of us. If you look at the bottom, not the Rush, which is the next Mar Malkum, which I'll get to in a moment, but look at the one after that, Beis Yosef Choshen Mishpat Simen Reish Mem Tes. Clearly we're still on, okay, the bottom of page one. Okay. Umasha Kasav Rabbeinu, Osir Litein Matnas Chinam La'Ovid Avodah Zarah, Lav La'Fuke Yishma'elim. This doesn't exclude Muslims. El La'Fuke Gertoshav. What it means to exclude is a Gerta. Gertoshav is someone who is Mekabel Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, who accepted the commitment of Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach in front of a Jewish Bezdin. Right? He's not Jewish, but he's called a Gertoshav. The Hainu Shekibel Alav Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, V'zeu Sh'anu Mitzuvim La'achayos. So we have neighborly obligations towards him. Aval Shar Goyim Kulam Din Echod Lahem. Beis Yosef, who is the author of the Shulchan Aruch, this position is always very important, is of the opinion that we cannot distinguish, unlike the Kaftar of Perach and others, between Muslims and Christians, that even Muslims, we don't mean Ovdei Avodah Zarah literally, we mean anybody who isn't sanctioned as a Gertosha. So the first issue then is, this prohibition to sell land in Eretz Yisrael, right, who does it apply to? If it applies only to Sheva Amamim, or if it is restricted only to hardcore polytheists like the Meiri, even if you want to say that it applies to Christians but doesn't apply to Muslims, so that, of course, opens a window to, you know, possibly sell Eretz Yisrael during the Shemitah year and not violate Lo Sechaneim to Muslims. There are plenty of Muslims in Eretz Yisrael, and to avoid that particular issue. According to the Beis Yosef and others who think that only Ger Toshav is included, then, of course, this particular avenue would work, although there are those who suggest expanding the idea of Ger Toshav to somebody who accepts Shevnitz B'nei Noach, even if not in a formal way, by means of a Bezdin during the time of Yovel. That's one issue. Who are we dealing with? However, those who suggested that it would be permissible and therefore necessary to sell Eretz Israel to non-Jews during the Shemitah year suggested other bases for this heter, even if we were to acknowledge that even Muslims would be included under the rubric of Lo Titen Lahem Chanaya Bekarka. After all, the idea of Lo Titen Lahem Chanaya Bekarka is the idea that Eretz Israel is the legacy of the Jewish people. Therefore, Jews, at least, unless there's some very, very good reason, should not be involved in giving away that particular legacy. But if that's the case, what would justify such a heter? So here are several suggestions emerge. I just want to mention them very quickly. One is based on the Tosefta. So if you look here in the Rush, also on page one, Rush of Avodah Zarah quotes his Tosefta. It's a Tosefta on the spot. Tanya b'Tosefta, b'medvar mamurim b'ove kachavim she'enu makiro. O sh'ya over mimakom lamako. Aval im haya oavo o sh'cheno mutter she'enu elo kimochro lo. A very fascinating Tosefta. Now what you have to know is that this Tosefta is referring to one aspect of Lo Titen Lahem chen or chinam bekarka. Gemara says that losachaneim, the strange terminology, right, was intended to convey three different things. Don't give them chanoya bekarka, right? Don't give away real estate in Eretz Yisrael. That's what we're primarily interested in this year. Lo titen chen, it's the way that you relate to them, admire them, how you express yourself. We're not going to discuss that right now. And the other one is matnas chinam, giving away free gifts, giving gratuities. When it comes to the gratuity part, the Tosefta says there's a difference between a stranger, somebody whom with whom you have no prior or ongoing relationship, and somebody who, let's say, is a worker or a neighbor who you recognize. Many people, know Haig, have the tradition to give gifts to their non-Jewish workers or neighbors, etc. It's based really on this Tosefta. Basically, Tosefta says, if you know the person, right, and therefore it isn't really gratuitous, basically, if you know him, there's a certain a rationale, and there's an ongoing investment in the friendship or the relationship, the principle of lo titan lematnas chinam does not apply. So there were those poskim who suggested, well, this Tosefta is an opening to possibly justify selling the gland of Eretz Yisrael during the Shemitah. After all, it's the same source, lo sechaneim, it's just a different dinim, there are three dinim. We see from the Tosefta that if it's not done, right, gratuitously, meaning without reason, but there's a purpose, namely you're investing in a certain kind of relationship where you're accomplishing something, it isn't gratuitous, it's very purposeful, then under those conditions, there would be no such iser. Just like matnas chinam, right, is solved by Misha Makiro, or if there's a person who you're investing in, so too, lo titanem chanoya bekark. This, however, was challenged by others. Clearly, there is room to make a distinction. And the question is, how do you understand the Tosefta? If the Tosefta is telling us that the Isurim of lo sechaneim are subject to a heter of Makiro, if you recognize or are involved with the person, and if you assume that all three of the Isurim of lo sechaneim are basically interchangeable, meaning they're all the same type of Isur, and whatever heter applies to one lo sechaneim applies to the other, so then you might suggest that the Tosefta is a foundation to permit, right, if it's a beneficial, if you're investing in some sort of an outcome, even lo titan chanoya bekart. But certainly it's very logical to draw the following distinction. The Tosefta is not providing a heter for lo sechaneim. The Tosefta is redefining how we characterize matnas chinam. The iser of matnas chinam is precisely the fact that it's gratuitous, that there's no reason, there's no understandable motivation. And therefore, it's merely an expression of affection, right, to a non-Jew, right, whose lifestyle, leaves something to be desired. So the prohibition is, lo titan lahem matnas chinam. But if he works for you, right, if you have an ongoing relationship with him, then that's not matnas chinam. The context basically redefines how we look at this transaction. And that's exactly what the Tosefta says. Aval im oya ohavo o shcheno mutter she'eno ela kimochro lo. The Tosefta doesn't say if it's l'shem, shachein, or something else, there's a heter of lo sechaneim. It says it's not defined anymore as matnas chinam. And that would apply to the lo sechaneim of matnas chinam. It certainly doesn't apply, presumably, to lo titin lahem chanoya bekarka, unless you assume that the prohibition of chanoya bekarka to begin with includes the element of it being gratuitous. But if the Isur is simply giving them an entrenched chelek in Eretz Yisrael, then this Tosefta would not be helpful. However, there were those who suggested that there might be other bases, there might be another foundation, and that is as follows. Either a mechira lezman katzuv, maybe the prohibition to sell land in Eretz Yisrael, chanoya bekarka, is only when you sell it permanently. The problem is you're giving away the legacy of the Jewish people. But if you sell it temporarily for a year, right, that doesn't violate chanoya, just like there's no prohibition of schiras. This, of course, gets you into the problem, which we're not going to elaborate right now, but has a whole literature in halacha as well, What is the relationship between a temporary sale, right, a permanent sale on the other side, and renting? Right? When is mechira lizman katzuv, right, selling something seemingly absolutely but limiting or qualifying the time frame? When is that merely another way of saying renting, right? And when is it considered a full sale? So with regard to ribis, with regard to onah, with regard to numerous issues, this comes up. We're not going to discuss the details now, but the Rambam in Hilchos Mechira, Perek Gimel, discusses it. Va'aretz lo timacher litzmitzut. There's a prohibition to sell land in Eretz Yisrael permanently in general, your legacy land in Eretz Yisrael. There's a whole discussion in the Sefer HaChinuch, Mitzvah Shin Lamites, the Ramban, the Sefer HaMitzvos, Reish Chav Zayin, whether or not Mechira Lizman Katzuv, a limited sale, is considered to be Mechira Litzmitzus, I'm sorry, the violation, or not. There were those who suggested that this might be a solution to the problem of Lotitalem Chanoya Bekarka, since you're only selling every seventh year. Rav Kook suggested something else, and that is that Lotitalem Chanoya Bekarka would apply to a non-Jew who does not have previously any stake in Eretz Yisrael. Basically, what you're doing is you're sharing Eretz Yisrael with him. He's somebody who previously was not an owner, and now he is. But what if you were to add to the real estate holdings of someone who already was a landowner in Eretz Yisrael? Would that also violate Lotitalem Chanoya Bekarka? That was the basis upon which Rav Kook suggested that you have to find somebody who already has legal ownership and use that individual as the person who would acquire formally the lands of Eretz Yisrael during the Shemitah year. Other suggestions were made as well. Even if you don't formally apply the din of the Tosefta, it's possible to apply the mentality of the Tosefta. After all, Lotitalim Chanoya Bekarka, as understood by the Rambam in Perek Gimel of Avodah Zarah, and as understood by Reina Bachia in his Perush al Torah and others, is basically the idea that selling real estate in Eretz Yisrael is the antithesis of Yeshiva Aretz. The whole idea of Yeshiva Aretz, especially as Ramban depicts it in his famous comments in Sefer HaMitzvos, Mitzvah Dalid, is that in every generation, Jews are obligated to intensify their relationship with the land, and part of the way that you do that is to acquire land, to live on the land, to cultivate the land, etc. Completely inconsistent with that approach is Lotiten Lohem Chanoya Bekarka, selling real estate to non-Jews. However, what if you had a situation where the only way to promote Yishuv Haaretz was to sell some land, especially on a limited basis, to non-Jews? Right? Now that would be a sad, even a tragic irony in some sense, and obviously one which was brought about by an anomalous convergence of circumstances. Right, that is certainly isn't the ideal. But if that's pragmatically what you're up against, in other words, you have you're trying to encourage people to live in Eretz Yisrael. That also depends on the economy being viable, etc. So then you're selling the land, right? Seemingly a violation of Lotitalem Chanoya, but not for the sake of undermining Yeshiva Aretz, but for promoting Yeshiva Aretz. So there were those poskim who suggested that would also solve the problem of Lo Sechane. Most poskim are the opinion that even if you were to violate Lo Sechaneim, the Mechira would be Chal. You would violate a prohibition, but the Mechira would be Chal. The Chazon Ish had a very famous a problem with this. Chazon Ish said that if somebody sells a land on behalf of the government, that person is a shliach. He's a shliach of Medinas Yisrael. And then, selling in a manner which violates Isurim, like Lo Sechaneim, potentially involves you in the principle of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. And there is a debate among the Rishonim in a situation of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira, whether or not the Shlichus is effective or not. In other words, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira, and you shouldn't do it, and you, meaning the Shliach, rather than the Mishaleach, the person who sent you, is the one who violates, or does it go a step further and say, the shlichos of an avera is not chal. This is really 2 days in Tosas and Bamutzia Daf Yud. Chazon Ish said, if it's really a violation of losach haneim and it's done through shlichos, there could be a potential problem in that respect as well. This is just a brief survey of some of the issues that were discussed in terms of the problem of losach haneim, lo titan lem chanoi bekarka. The bigger question, the bigger issue, is not whether or not you violate losach haneim. Mostly, it seems that there are many justifications, many considerations that neutralize losach haneim. The question is whether or not you get the effect that is desired by actually selling land to non-Jews. In order to highlight this very briefly, let's just go quickly to the Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin. This is on page 2. Kedushas Eretz Yisrael L'Shemitah. Famous Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara tells us, Kedemachruz Rabbianai Puku Vezaru B'Shvias Mishum Arnuna. They used to tax the landholders very severely, I might add. So Rabbi Yanai, very puzzling, made an announcement that you should go out and you should seed the land, you should plant during the Shemitah year because you have to have, produce in order to pay the government for taxes. Chazru Lomar, and that's why they reassessed what they originally said, that Osvin Ksherin, people who were involved in that kind of activity, would not be possibly Eidus because they were allowed to do this behavior. We'll see why in a moment. Sochrin, people who ceded the land because they were interested commercially in profiting from Shnas HaShmita, they were possible agents. And the Gemara tells a famous story. Rab Chia Bar Zarnuki, Rab Shimon Ben Yotzadok, Hava Ka'azli La'aber Shana Ba'asya. These are two Tamid Chachamim went out to create a leap year. That year, the way the seasons went, it was justified. Pogu B'Reish Lakish, and they bumped into Reish Lakish on the way. So Itfil Bahadayu, Omar Ezel Ichsi, Heichi Avdi Uvda. Reish Lakish said, oh, this is a great opportunity to see how Ibra Chodesh is done. Not our topic right now. Anyways, on the way, it became very eventful. Chazilahu Gavra the Kakariv. It was a Shnas HaShemitah, and they bumped into some Jew who was out there plowing his land. So the Gemara says, Omar Lahem, Kohen V'Choresh. You guys, you're a Kohen. I know we knew it was a Kohen. But he's a Kohen and you're doing Charisha, you're plowing the land during Shemitah. Omrulo, this is what Reish Lakish said. So they turned to him and they said, Yachalomar agistun ani betocho. Perhaps he has a justification. We'll discuss what this means in just a second. Maybe he's an agistun. Okay. Suchazilau gavra davakosach bekarmi. They went on a little bit longer on the journey. And they found some other Jew who was pruning his vineyard, which is also prohibited in Shemitah. Amalahan, so he said to them, Kohen Mazamer, can you believe? And the callous Jews that are violating Shemitah. Amrlo, Yachalom ala'ako besabada nitzarech. Now he suggested some other justification. In other words, that this Jew wasn't really violating the Shemitah. Amar Lahem, Halev Yodea im la'akel im al-kalkalos. Very fascinating Gemara about being Malamed Schus on the members of Klal Yisrael. There's a lot to say about it, but not for now. What's going on in this Gemara? Right? How were they allowed to do these things in Shemitah? And particularly, what is Agistun Ani Besocha? So Rashi says, number 7, Puku Vizaru Bishvias, Shvias Bizman Azed Rabbanan, the Batla Kedusha Sa'ara. Rashi says, the reason they were allowed to, because of the tax burden, they were allowed to seemingly violate Shemitah, is because Shemitah in our time is Drabanan, Kedushas Aretz is Bat. What is Agiston? So Rashi says, Sachir, the Karka Shal Nachrihu. He is a worker, it's not his land, he's working the land, he's a Jewish worker of a non-Jewish land, and therefore he's allowed to do this. Nami, another answer, Mishum Arnuna, just the tax burden alone, which we'll see in a moment. So what's going on? Agisun Ali Besocho, according to Rashi, basically is the idea that if you are working a non-Jewish land in Eretz Yisrael during the Shemitah year, somehow that absolves you, right, from the prohibitions of Shemitah. That is the foundation of the idea that somehow selling the land solves the problem. So we need to investigate the scope of this din. So the Bali Tosis, number 10, no, I'm sorry, number 9, Gisan Ribasocha, quote Rashi, Pirusha Kuntis Loshon Rishon Sacher Ani Basocha Vakarkashon Nachri Veloni Ira. So says, this cannot be right. Domina Begitin, Ein Odrinim Nachri Beshvias. You're not allowed to help a non-Jew with his plowing during the Shemitah year. If it's the non-Jew's land, why can't the Jewish friend, neighbor, worker, why can't he plow together with him? So you see that Rashi's wrong, right? Now, what is Rashi wrong about? That Shvius Bizman Azez Drabanan? Or that Yesh Kinyanakum, that a non-Jewish ownership of the land allows you to escape the strictures of Shemitah? Not so clear. So look at number 10. Ein Odrin Ma'akum Shvius. So Tosa says, Ha de Kamar be Perig Zabor, but the Gemar in Sanhedrin, Gabe Kohen V'choresh, Yachalom Ra'agistun Ani Besocha. It seems like the Gemar says in Sanhedrin that if it's a non-Jewish land, the Jewish worker is allowed to work there. Lo Kamosh appears Bekuntris Sacher V'nachri, V'mash Mahacha de Asur. The Gemar here says you're not allowed to plow with him. V'lo Mestaber L'chalek Ben Chinam L'schar. It doesn't seem like the distinction is whether he's doing it as a friend or he's doing it as a worker. If they don't come up with the tax money, right, the Jewish community is going to be literally in danger. So they violated Shemitah. Wow. Then Tosa says, Inami, Kasavar yesh kinyan l'nachri ba'aretz lafkia mishvius. Or maybe he holds, this Rashi, maybe this Gemara holds in Sanhedrin, that when a non-Jew owns land, that uproots the obligations or the dinim of Shemitah. Inami, or b'shvius b'zman azed d'rabanan, afagav d'b'drabanan asu l'nachri acher, gabi melechetiru. Tosis here basically isn't sure whether non-Jewish ownership solves this problem or not. Two deos in Tosis. What's this all going on? What's the basis for it? So let's look at number 11. Number 11 discusses directly the impact of non-Jewish ownership of land in Eretz Yisrael on the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. But it doesn't speak specifically, I should warn you, about Shemitah. Amar Rabba. The Gemara says that one view, we don't paskin like this necessarily, we'll see, is that there's no kinyan akum, a non-Jewish ownership in Eretz Yisrael does not uproot the status of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, the sanctity of the Peros with regard to Meiser. That's one view. However, if a non-Jew buys land in Eretz Yisrael, he can do what he wants to the physical land. He can change the contours and so on. Okay. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Afa Pishiyesh Lavu Kachavim Beretz Yisrael Afkiya Mide Meiser, Shenemar Degoncha Velo Deganakum, the fruits or the produce of the Jew, not of the non-Jew. So non-Jewish ownership undermines sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. But he can't change the contours of the land. The Gemara says, what's the argument? Okay. Then the Gemara, back and forth, which I skipped the details, tries to prove yes, no, yes, no. Does non-Jewish ownership really undermine the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael? Finally, the Gemara says, "Hochi b'mayaskina b'Suria." In Suria, kasavar kibush yachid lo shmei kibush. Suria was that part of Eretz Yisrael which was only sanctified, which was sanctified too early, according to some Rishonim, and it wasn't invested with the full sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. Trumos, maestros, shmita in Suria is only derabbanan. It's only of rabbinic, not of Doraisava. So what emerges from this Gemara? There's a debate whether or not non-Jewish ownership really does neutralize the requirements of Eretz Yisrael. We paskin, generally, like the first view, that if the, certainly if the sanctity of the land and the obligations of trumos and maestros are daraisa, are minan Torah, so then non-Jewish ownership doesn't affect it. However, the Gemara has an exception, Surya. If it's Surya, where the obligations were different, we'll see in a moment, I'm saying that delicately, then yesh kinyanakum, non-Jewish ownership, will matter. Again, remember, in the whole controversy about Shemitah then, it really comes down partially to this question. Is Shemitah min HaTorah bizmanenu in our time or not? That's number one. Number two, if it's not, can you apply this rule that non-Jewish ownership of the land, since it's only midrabanan, yesh kinyanakum lafkia, that will neutralize the obligations. So what's going to be a linchpin in all of this are two things. Number one, the Gemara speaks about trumos and maestros. It doesn't mention Shemitah. It certainly doesn't mention Shemitah voda bekarka. What difference does it make? So the Beis Halevi makes the following argument. He says it's one thing to say that non-Jewish ownership will affect the fruits and the sanctity of the fruits that are produced by the land during that non-Jewish ownership. Right? During that time, it didn't have full Kedusha, and therefore the fruits that are produced are not Shemitah or Trumos or Maestros fruit, etc. But would we go so far as to say that the land itself is affected by non-Jewish ownership? Not just the peros, but the karka? Because when we're talking about Shemitah, it's not just the peros. It's the planting, right? It's the reaping. It's the plowing. The Gemara in Sanhedrin wasn't talking about the peros. The Gemara in Sanhedrin was talking about the permissibility of treating the land itself. Did anybody ever say that kinyan akum, that non-Jewish ownership, can affect even the land as opposed to the peros? Moreover, the Gemara never said anything about Shemitah. In the Bavli, they speak about maestros, trumos, bikurim. They never mention Shemitah. Maybe Shemitah is different. So much depends on two things. Number one, understanding that din, which we're going to spend the next few minutes talking about a little bit. Secondly, the paradigm of Surya. The Gemara never says that any rabbinic obligation can be neutralized by non-Jewish ownership. The Gemara says that Surya, right, which was not a biblical Eretz Yisrael obligation in terms of Kedushas, Trumos, and Maestros, and Shemitah, is subject to Yesh Kinyanakum Lafkia. So if you look at Rashi, let's look now at number 13. Rashi says two things, 12 and 13. Rashi says, She'ein kinyan im kana ove kachavim karka ba'aretz, ein kinyano kanui, lafkia mikdushasa, shelo tiskaya b'maiser, v'yisrol akonim imenu peros, tzarech la'aser. When Rashi wants to explain the view that non-Jewish ownership means that there'll be no sanctity of the land, he focuses on the peros. He doesn't say anything more. This in contrast to the Rambam, who in Perek Aleph, Halacha Yud, this is number 25 on page 4, the Rambam paskins that Akum Shekana Beretz Yisrael lo ifkiu min ha-mitzvos, al-arei b'kdushasa, non-Jewish ownership in biblical obligation has no effect. And then he adds, Lefikach, therefore, im chazar Yisraelu lekacham imenu, eino kekibush yachid, elamafris trumos amaisros uvevi bikurim v'akol min ha-torah, ki'ilu lo nimkara la'akum me'olam. And then he says, v'yesh kinyan la'akum besurya lafkir min ha-maisros umin ha-shviyis kemoshis ba'er. The Rambam says two amazing things. Number one, the Rambam says, if we're talking about biblical obligations and biblical Eretz Yisrael, right, then non-Jewish ownership doesn't help you. But he also tells us, and let's say it would have helped you, how would it have worked? The Rambam says, if it had worked, that non-Jewish ownership would change the way that we relate to the land, it would have worked much more than what Rashi said. The way we would have looked at it was that even if you reacquire the land from the non-Jew, it only becomes subject to the dinim of Shemitah and Meiser and Truma if you hold that kibush yachid, shma kibush. In other words, it's as if you reconquered it the very first time.
As the Rambam's view is that Kinyan Akum doesn't just neutralize the fruits of Eretz Yisrael and their sanctity. If it does work, it's like practically being in Chutz La'aretz until you reacquire it. So there's a debate between Rashi and the Rambam whether the effect of Kinyan Akum is to neutralize Eretz Yisrael's sanctity completely, or it's just to basically permit the use of the payrolls. Hold that in the back of your mind for a minute. When we finish this up in a couple of minutes, we'll come back to that. Now look at number 13 on page 2. And this is the other point of Rashi. What is the significance of Surya, where non-Jewish ownership works? So Rashi says, the Meiser Dida Midrabanan. The Sham Yesh Kinyan Biad Akum Lafkiya. What's significant about Surya is that the obligations of Trumos and Meisros and so on are only rabbinic. And in a rabbinic obligation, Kinyan Akum works. That's what Rashi says. If you look at the Sefer Trumos, it's a little late, so we're not going to read it now, but you look at it. It's the, towards the end, maybe it's the second last piece. I'm guessing it's on page 5. Is it 5? Yeah. Page 5, number 29. Sefer Trumos is one of the Balei Tosas. Sefer Trumos says, we paskin lahalacha that shvias bizman hazeh is rabbanan. And why? Because batla kedusha sa'aretz. I'll explain that in just a minute. Kedusha sa'aretz was canceled at the second korban. Just like the first korban, Habayis canceled kedusha sa'aretz, the sanctity of the land that was invested by Yoshua. Then Ezra and people from Bavel came up and they re-sanctified, reinvested the land with sanctity. And the second korban, says the Sefer HaTruma, to view in the Gemara, and he paskins this way, no more. Lefikach, therefore, says the Sefer HaTruma, if a bizmanenu, if you are dealing with land that is owned by a non-Jew, you could even seed the land, you could even reap from the land, you could plow the land, etc. Because it's exactly like Surya. And he quotes Rashi in Sanhedrin, who says, because what's significant about Surya? That it's drabanan. Many of the proponents of the Heter Mechira based the Heter Mechira on these sources. They basically said, Shmias Bizman Hazeh, according to most Rishonim, we'll see in a moment, but according to most Rishonim, is Drabanan. That means that all of Eretz Yisrael Bizmanenu is like Surya. If all of Eretz Yisrael is like Surya, so then Yesh Kinyan Akum Lafkiya, non-Jewish ownership neutralizes these obligations, and if non-Jewish ownership neutralizes the obligations, then you can proceed, you know, with certain chumras, of course, you know, with the regular economic activity during Shemitah year. That was the foundation of many of these sources. However, things are not so simple, otherwise it wouldn't be a massive debate. There are poskim who disagree on both sides. There's a group that suggests that it's not so simple that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is drabanan. The Rambam himself provides us with conflicting evidence. We'll try to just wrap this up in the next 6-7 minutes. The Rambam here, in Perek Dalet, Hilchos Shemitah, number 14. Perek Dalet Halacha Chafei says, Ein Shvias Noheges Ela Be'eretz Yisrael. Shemitah applies only in Eretz Yisrael Bilvad. Shenemar Kisavo'u El Ha'aretz. Benoheges Bein Bifnei Abayis Bein Shalom Bifnei Abayis. Ooh, very interesting Rambam. Shemitah doesn't require Beis HaMikdash. Does that mean that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is Doraisa? It means it could be. If it required a Beis HaMikdash, it couldn't be. But it doesn't mean that it is. Because just because it doesn't require a Beis HaMikdash doesn't mean that there aren't other factors, right? So here we have a major debate. You will give you for homework to take home some of the Makoros. The Re-Kurkus and the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah is the Beis Yosef, is the Shulchan Aruch. His view is particularly very important. The Kesef Mishnah, in three different places, I have them all here. It's the Re-Kurkus and the Kesef Mishnah, two early Mefarshim of the Rambam. It's number 15 and 16, number 18 and 19, and number 21 and 22. In three different Rambams, we have this debate. The Kesef Mishnah insists in all three places that the Rambam's view is that Shemitah b'zman hazeh is Doraisa. That's very consequential. The Rambam isn't just a Rishon. The Rambam is the Rambam. The Rikorkis, earlier Perish even than the Kesef Mishnah, disagrees. Says the Rambam's view is that Shemitah is Drabana. Now, Dalet Chafei, number 14, is ambivalent. Look at number 17, Perek Tes Halacha Beis. Ein Shemitas Ksafim Noheges Min HaTorah, another topic for this year, the wiping out of debts that takes place in the end of the Shemitah year, is not Min HaTorah, Bizmanenu, says the Rambam. El Bizman Sheyovel Noheg Sheyesham Shemitas Karka. Only when Yovel applies, because then Shemitas Karka applies. What does Shemitas Karka mean? Shari Yishuv HaKarka Lebala Belo Kesef Dover Zeh Kabbalah Amru Chachamim Bizman Sha Tamashamit Karka Tamashamit Ksafim B'kol Mokom Bein Ba'aris Bein B'chutz La'aretz. Bizman She'ein Shemitas Karka Ein HaTamashmit Ksafim. The simple reading of the Rambam is that Shemitas Karka here means the dinim of Shemitah during the Shemitah year. And the Rambam is telling you that if there's no Yovel, there is no Shemitah, meaning the Rambam holds Shemitah's Drabana. That's how the Rikorkis reads the Rambam. Kesef Mishnah says no, it means Yovel, the return of legacy property to each family during Yovel. It doesn't refer to Shemitah at all. Look at one more. That's on number 20. No, number 20. Very good halacha test. There are different girsos. Here the Rambam says, Bizman she Yovel noeg. During the Yovel period, noeg din eved ivri, din batel rechoma, sadech haramim, sadech huza, mekablen ger toshav. And here's the key one. B'noheges shvius ba'aretz v'ashmatas ksafim b'kol mako min haTorah. Right? Shemitah and Shemitah's ksafim depend on Yovel, says the Rambam. U'bizman she'en Yovel noeg, ein noeg echad mikol elu chutz mishvius ba'aretz, with the exception of Shemitah, v'ashmatas ksafim b'kol mako min divrei. Now the words b'kol mako min divreiim are said about Shemitah's ksafim. Do they also apply to shvius ba'aretz? Again, the debate between Mari Korkis and the Rambam. You can see there are three ambiguous Rambams in terms of the Rambam's view whether Shemitah is Doraisa Drabana. So when some poskim was said, well, the Shemitah is Doraisa, then surely non-Jewish ownership is not going to help you. However, most of the Mefarshim are the opinion that the Rambam's view is that Shemitah is Drabanan, that most Rishonim believe that Shemitah is Drabanan. Once that's true, is it then obvious that non-Jewish ownership, if you could get past Lo Sechanim, will help you or not? So here let me just take the last couple of minutes to discuss this. So the Beis Halevi came up with a very fascinating idea. Beis Halevi says, if you look at the Gemara in Gittin, it doesn't say anywhere that Kinyan Akum, the effectiveness of non-Jewish ownership to neutralize the problems of Trumos and Maestros and maybe even Shemitah, it doesn't say anywhere that that depends whether Shemitah is Daraisa or Truma is Daraisa or Rabbanan. It mentions Surya. Says the Beis Halevi, did anybody ever say that Meiser Yerek, vegetables, the Truma of Meiseros on vegetables, everybody agrees is only a rabbinic obligation. It's not Minat Torah. What is Minat Torah? Certainly Tirosh V'Yitzar, right? Certainly there's a debate about Peros. But vegetables, everybody agrees that the obligations of Trumos and Maestros and vegetables is Drabana. Said the Beis Halevi, did anybody ever say, Yeshkin and Akum Lafkia, may Trumos and Maestros shall Yerek? Anybody ever say such a thing? We never ever heard such an idea. Why? Beis Halevi said, because the question of the effectiveness of non-Jewish ownership in neutralizing the biblical obligations of Trumos and Maestros and Shemitah, etc., has nothing to do, per se, with something being rabbinic or a biblical obligation. Yerek is always rabbinic, it doesn't matter. Not only that, the Mishnah says in Shvi, in Gittin, that you cannot help the non-Jew being Oder, right, plowing or helping him plow his field. Oder, according to everybody, is only a rabbinic prohibition. Any, Anybody ever say that since it's only a rabbinic prohibition, therefore it's permitted? The Mishnah says it's not permitted. So what is Surya then? So the basis, this is typical, you know, brisk thinking. This is pre-brisk thinking in a way. What the Beis Halevi said was, what's important about Surya is not the fact that the obligations are rabbinic. It's that the Kedushas Haaretz is non-existent. The places of Surya were not invested in the right order or with the right authorization with the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. The Trumos and Maestros and Shemitah there was rabbinic, but it's not the point. The point isn't that they're rabbinic. The point is that they never flowed from biblical sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. So you can have a situation, says the Beis Halevi, where a particular application is only rabbinic, like Maaser Yerek, right, or Oder B'Nichsei Hagoy, but if it flows from a situation where the Kedusha Sa'aretz is Min HaTorah, you still won't have the effect of Kinyan Akum neutralizing. So, for example, what you really have to ask, said the Beis Halevi, is even if you assume Shemitah in our time is Midrabanan, is it Dirabanan because the Kedusha Sa'aretz is Dirabanan? Or is it Dirabanan despite the fact that the Kedusha Sa'aretz is Min HaTorah? So Beis Halevi said, well, this depends. Why is Shmias Bizman HaZeh Midrabanan? If it's because of the reason that Rashi gave in Sanhedrin and the Sefer HaTruma, and that is that at the time of the second Chorban, Kedushas Haaretz was canceled. It was batel. So then, it's like Surya, in other words, and Yesh Kinyanakum Lahavkia, because there's no sanctity biblically anymore to the land. But let's say we say that the reason that there's no sanctity to Shvias Bizman HaZeh is because there's no Yovel. The lack of Yovel is a condition for Shemitah. But it doesn't mean that there's no sanctity of the land. It just means that despite the fact that there is sanctity of the land, it's rabbinic. So then, it's not like Surya. What's it like? Maaser Yerek. No one's going to say non-Jewish ownership can help you. Then the Beis Halevi made one other point, and that was, according to the Rambam, it seems that Shemitah is Drabanan, but for a totally different reason. We're not going to read it because it's too late now, but if you look at the Rambam's in Hilchos Trumos, number 23, 24, and 26, Rambam came up with a new idea. Rambam said, at the time of Ezra, when they re-sanctified the land of Eretz Yisrael because they started resettling it, there was a problem. There wasn't Bias Kulchem. The majority of the Jews did not come back. And consequently, even though the Kedusha Sa'aretz, the sanctity was there, since there was no Bias Kulchem, since most of the Jews weren't there, Trumos and Maestros are only Drabanan. That's what the Rambam says in Perek Aleph, Hilchos Sanhedrin, Alach Chava. Says the Beis Halevi, well, if that's true, then according to the Rambam, maybe that's the reason that Shemitah in our time is Drabanan as well. So now we have to ask ourselves, is Bias Kulchem, the lack of Bias Kulchem, when Jews didn't come back, the majority didn't come back to live in Eretz Yisrael, was that just a condition that was lacking in Trumos and Maestros, and possibly Shvias? Or was it something missing in the sanctity of the land? Beis Halevi says, in his opinion, it's like not having Yovel. So basically, the sanctity of the land is there, even though Shemitah is Drabanan. Non-Jewish ownership is not going to help you neutralize the problem. But I want to leave you with is the following idea. However, the last piece on the Mar Makomos is a piece I copied from the Chidusha Rab Chaim Alevi, the Beis Halevi's son, Rab Chaim. And the Rav Zatzal once pointed out that if you put the Beis Halevi and Rab Chaim together, you have a possible justification again for the Heter Mechir. What Rab Chaim pointed out was the following. Rav Chaim said, there are really two dinim, and this philosophically is very important for us to understand as well. One din is that Yovel only applies when the majority of Jews are in Eretz Yisrael, where we're getting closer to that point. They might meet also the Shvatim. I don't want to get into the details. It'll be very complicated. But the point is that in Yovel, if you don't have the majority of Jews in Eretz Yisrael, there's no Yovel. But that depends. Every Yovel we have to recalculate. However, says Rav Chaim, the requirement of bias kolchem, the idea that when Ezra came back to Eretz Yisrael, he came back with a minority, not with the full majority of it, that doesn't depend each and every year, or each and every Shemitah, or each and every Yovel. That depended on the moment when Kedushas Haaretz began in the time of Ezra. We're going to have to wait for bias shlishis, for the next Kedusha, says Reb Chaim, to start that all over again. Why? The requirement of the majority of Jews in Eretz Yisrael for Yovel, says Reb Chaim, is a precondition. But the lack of bias kulchem, which affects, in his opinion, Shemitah and Trumos and Maisros, is also part of the very sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. When Jews didn't return with Ezra, that lack, now I'm explaining, of confluence or convergence between Kedushas Haaretz and Kedushas Ha'am left Eretz Yisrael deficient in its sanctity. Therefore, it's possible that even according to the Rambam, if the reason that Shemitah Bizmanenu is not Minat Torah is because of lack of Bias Kulchem, that's not an extraneous problem. That's a problem that goes to the heart, possibly, of Kedushas Haaretz. Not so simple, because you might say it's missing part of Kedushas Haaretz, but it still has part of Kedushas Haaretz, which leaves us to explain both sides of the debate. Even if we take the view that you need the paradigm of Surya, meaning a lack of Kedushas Haaretz, to justify the Heter Mechira, whether a lack of Bias Kulchem really constitutes that same problem as well. Just to conclude, the idea, especially of Reb Chaim, that there is a convergence of the sanctity of the land and the sanctity of the people is something which makes the whole Shemitah controversy something very emotional for us all. But it's also something which gives us great hope, because whether or not we can reconstitute to Bias Kulchem, we certainly are getting much closer to reconstituting Kol Yoshveh Aleh of Yovel, and surely getting closer to experiencing the Haftachos of the Torah in Parshas Bahar and in Parshas Bechukosai. Thank you very much. I'll be happy to take questions. Who's in the Zoom, nevertheless?